Does anybody recognize that one?
Yeah. So this is about to be a 20-minute wrap. Sorry. You will murder me. Sorry, no. But I thought it's exactly apt for what I want to talk about, because this is a period of my life where a lot of change has happened quite forcefully. So I'll start from for people who don't recognize, this is the Fresh Prince of Bel Air. I added this as a joke a bit. But I'll start off with essentially the score in the summer of 2019, back when the world still made sense. Before COVID, before everything else. And Danielle and I were discussing whether we would have a third child or not, because if you know us, we do have three children. But it was a particularly difficult decision for us, because we'd actually initially set out to only have two, mainly because our first child, Andrew, who you've met, hopefully, was diagnosed with hemophilia when he was about 9 months old, which is a genetic condition. So him having it meant that any future children would have a 25% chance of having the same, mainly the boys. And it is manageable. He has a very normal life, but it does require management, and that management is quite costly, especially in Lebanon. Here, the NHS takes care of it. But and in general, it is quite a burden. And we initially, when that happened, we said we wouldn't stop at one, because we have wanting to be an only child, but we were initially set on stopping at two, but then we felt that the Lord was telling us maybe you should consider having three. So we discussed it, we prayed about it, and eventually decided to go for it. And so in September, we found out that Danielle was pregnant, and at this point, the world still made sense. And then in October starts the complete financial collapse of the country we were living in at the time, in Lebanon. The banking system failed, any central bank failed, the currency started devaluing, there were massive protests in the street. Actually, the company I was working for, Pioneer, worked from home before COVID, because we couldn't actually physically get to the office because of the protests. And then in March, COVID lockdowns happened. And then about 2 weeks before Danielle was due to go in for her C-section, I was shaving and I noticed a lump in my neck, and I called her over and I asked her, you know, can you feel this? She goes, yes. So I called the doctor. He said, oh, it's a lymph node. It's probably a regular infection. Give it 2 weeks. If it doesn't go away, call me again. So 2 weeks later, Danielle gives birth. We're at the hospital. It's still there. So I give him a call. And at the time, I was also sort of, you know, he says it's irregular. Oh, it's probably inflamed. It's an infection, probably viral. But at this point, we haven't had contact with anybody for, you know, a month and a half since the first lockdown. We were very spooked about it, because the effects of COVID on babies or pregnancies weren't yet known. It was very, very early days, you know, March 2020. And so we were very strict about not seeing anybody before Danielle went in for her C-section. And so, you know, you're already starting to have thoughts. But anyway, I call him up. Andrew, Alex is a day old at this point. And he says, oh, it's fine. We'll run some tests for common viruses that cause this thing. We'll start you on a course of antibiotics. We'll measure it in 2 weeks. If it's still the same, then we'll see. Fast forward 2 weeks, still the same. So this time you start hearing words like CT scan and biopsy. So anyway, they go in, they take a small sample, and they tell me it takes 7 to 10 days to get the results back. The doctor calls me 6 days later at 8 a.m. So, you know, mm-hmm. you know it's never good when that happens. And he goes, I don't want to scare you, but what follows is probably one of the scariest sentences I've ever heard. It's probably cancer. It's spread to your nose nodes. We don't know where from yet. So, well, it's fine. I get referred to an ENT oncologist. They run some more tests. They eventually find a small tumor in the thyroid. And, well, at that point, probably goodish news in the sense that it's one of the easier cancers to deal with. So if you're going to have cancer, it's one of the easier ones to have. And essentially, the treatment is an operation, which we schedule in June of that year. It's quite involved. They need to remove the thyroid itself, but also all the nodes on the right side of the neck. So if any of you have ever wondered what this scar is, that's what that is. And it's a 7-hour procedure. I need to stay in the hospital for 5 days afterwards. So we do that in June. Danielle can't visit me, which adds to the burden. By the way, I'm going to go through all of the events, and then we'll draw some conclusions, because it's a lot of events. But Danielle can't visit me, so my younger brother and my father keep me company for those 5 days. The reason she can't visit is, one, we have a 40-day-old baby at this point, and two, it's COVID. That's the rules around who can visit, who cannot, are very complicated. And so I get out of the hospital, and I'm due for a follow-up treatment in August, on the 6th of August, to be precise. Now, on the 4th of August, the Scipios living in the sides to experience critical existence failure. And, you know, there's what has later been described as the biggest non-nuclear explosion about 5 miles away from my house and the port of Beirut. This happens on the 4th. And on the 6th, I'm due to drive into a hospital that's actually on the other side between my house and the port. So the port sits between us. So it should have been a 15 to 30 minute drive, depending on traffic, ends up taking about 4 hours. But I still go in because that specific kind of treatment has to happen on a very particular day. They order it like 3 months ahead. So I still go. I drive the 4 hours to the hospital. I make it. I get the treatment. I can't actually go back home because when you do that thing, it's actually, I become dangerous to other people. You're radioactive for about 48 hours. They keep you in a locked room with warning signs that other people should come in. And then you have another 2 weeks where you're not supposed to be around children and pregnant women. So I actually go to stay with my parents for a couple of weeks. And then I go back home. And then I go back to work in September. And I find that the startup I spent the last 6 years of my life helping build, I joined them as a very early stage thing. When I joined, it was like 10 engineers, was also in the process of collapsing. So we had a team of 50 engineers local. In the span of 3 or 4 months that year, we lost. So my manager, the head of engineering, my counterpart on the other side, the team, who was a manager of like 3 teams, same as me, 3 of their leads and a bunch of our senior engineers, all of them had quit to move to other countries because nobody wanted to live in Lebanon anymore. So one, I was field promoted to head of engineering. That was very fun coming back for, you know, a time away to try to figure that out, how to rebuild things. But also I was told that the company was considering moving headquarters to the UAE, because they saw continue to operate on Lebanon as an existential threat to the company. I said no. There were 2 reasons for me saying no. One was Andrew's hemophilia was very difficult to treat in the UAE because there it's private healthcare. There's no system of any kind, public healthcare or public insurance like in Lebanon, or social security of any kind. And it's a pre-existing genetic disorder. And just to frame it, Kurt, if I were to try to support this on my own, the cost is roughly on the order of about $10,000 a month for this treatment, which is lifelong. Now, in Lebanon, the state covered about 95% of that, so it was bearable. Here, the NHS covers it, but the UAE is private healthcare. So, yeah. So that was big problem number one. Big problem number two was Danielle and I had both discerned this in the past and reached out to you as well to be with a similar community as this, but in Lebanon, to invest our lives there. So I didn't want to leave the country, even though in the process of collapsing. So I said no. So a couple of months later, they come back to me with another offer, which was, look, we're moving there. We also plan to take the company public. We can't have our head of engineering in a different country. And so they made me a very, very, very good offer. You stay in Lebanon, you live there, you work remotely from there. On paper, you'll be in the UAE, you'll have a residency in the UAE, you come over every 6 weeks for a week. We'll pay you triple your salary because that's what the pay scale of the UAE is like versus Lebanon. And so I said, yeah, we're glad I signed. So that was the plan. Now, a couple of months before we were due to actually fly there, so this is around February or March of 2021 at this point, I had a flight there in early May. And so around that time, Daniela and I both sort of, this comes out of the conversation, we both had a very clear sense that we were supposed to consider this more seriously. So in our individual prayer thoughts, we both got a clear sense that we were supposed to consider this more seriously to pick up and move out of families, family to the UAE. It's okay. And so that removes one reason for saying no, which was, you know, we felt you were called by God to stay in the Lebanon, but it kept the other reason, which was Andrew's illness. And so I called his doctor about it just to ask, to explore the option. And she said, well, I have a patient who moved to the UAE and there might be something there. She gave me his number and I called him up. And what he said was, yeah, there is a government scheme that covers these things. And what you have to do is you have to actually apply for insurance first, not to get refused by the insurance. And then you go to the government and you say, there's this thing, it's needed to preserve somebody's life, essentially. It's a critical need, but the insurance is refusing to cover it, and then the government covers it. So I was like, fine, I'll explore that. I applied to the insurance. They said, okay, we'll cover it. I asked if I could have that, this was on the phone, I asked if I could have that in writing, and whether they were sure. I sent all the documents over. I said, it's a genetic pre-existing condition, are you sure? They said, yeah, we'll cover it. Your company has shelled out for a cop of the line, expat, whatever, insurance, and it covers pre-existing conditions for people moving into the country. It's fine. So yeah, in May, instead of me flying to the UAE to get my residency in order, we left the kids with my parents for 4 weeks. We flew there, we quarantined for 10 days because still COVID, and we got everything in order in about 3 weeks. The house, the schools, the furniture, the whole thing, and we came back home. And then we flew over, actually on the 1 year anniversary of the port explosion, on August 4th, 2021, while there were protests going on in the street for people sort of still protesting the fact that there, up to that point, and actually up till now, have been no accountability for that, we were on an airplane leaving the country. We landed there and we started to build our lives anew there. And about a year later, we actually, both of us, again got the sense that maybe you should look for something a bit more urgent than the UAE. And at the time, things were going well over there, except for one thing. We really did one thing which we both were starting to feel quite a bit after a year, which is that we had no spiritual life in the UAE. There was some form of a church. There wasn't really anything close to the community we grew up in. We had some friends, but it's expat land. And we were both starting to sort of chafe as living in the desert, essentially, in spiritual sense. And we picked London mainly because of Antioch. We were aware of the existence of Antioch. We met some people from here over the years living in a similar community in Lebanon. That's part of the sort of the spirit. So the same international organization. And we decided to move here. I applied for 3 jobs. The first one froze hiring the day I applied. The second one froze hiring as I was nearing the end of the interview process and about to get an offer. The third one hadn't gotten the memo that the tech sector was slowing down because of high interest rates. And so they only slowed hiring about 6 months after I joined them. So I got at the tail end of the wave of tech hiring, close to the tech hiring boom. Just the end of it in 2022 when they were all about to shut off the faucets. But I caught the end of it and we ended up moving here. And here we were welcomed by Antioch. We were welcomed by some wonderful people. And that's roughly the timeline. The reason I went into the timeline before drawing any specific conclusions, I didn't go into too much details. I think every one of those, maybe the months of those 2 years, can probably make it its own sharing. I could probably talk for 20 minutes on any 1 month period in that 2.5 period of years from 2019 until 2023. But the reason I didn't go into any details is because I think the list of events themselves, I think just thinking back on that period, just looking at that list, had its own quality in terms of everything that happened in there. And I did just want to sort of lay it out that way, just to make it clear. And I then started to draw some conclusions. The first one actually comes from Danielle as we were discussing this. She couldn't be here with me to share today, but this one comes from her.
You could just flip the slide over.
Actually, oh, that's the wrong order. Can you go to the next one? Sorry. No, my bad. Previous one? Yes, it's the top one. So this is from Matthew. Sorry, I misread. This is from Matthew. This is the way of a, you know, the famous example.
But the one that Virtues is saying, everyone that who hears these words of mine but does them will be like the wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock.
And one of the things that Danielle said to me as I was preparing the sharing and we were sort of going over all of it was she was quite amazed, so was I, in the sense that this entire sequence of events, with a lot of things that were deeply difficult for both of us to endure, we actually went through it nearly unscathed. And neither of us had our faith shaken in any significant way. In fact, it was increased. It was renewed. And we had spent the previous 10 years of both of our lives building a foundation there that only really became clear what had happened when everything was blown away back to the bedrock. And you could see that had been built on rock. I think for me, one of the most difficult periods in that time, probably around August in 2020, when I went and spent that 2 days alone at the hospital, I was probably not in a good place. I had just driven through what was a very apocalyptic vision of Beirut. So I did that 4 hours from my house to the hospital. I went through essentially the area of East Beirut that had been demolished by the explosion. I was actually stopped at one point for the procession the funeral procession for the firefighters who had died trying to put out the fire. So actually the road, my road to the hospital takes me just in front of the, is that called the barracks? The base for the firefighters that had responded to the fire at the port. So they'd actually stopped the traffic. Half an hour of that 4 hours was stopped there in front of it for that procession to come out and pass. And I, psychologically, it was very difficult to endure all of that. What I was going through, being treated for cancer at the time, but also knowing that the country I was living in, that I actually loved and wanted to spend the rest of my life in, that I had grown up in, was in the process of collapsing, but also that there would be no accountability of any kind for any of this, which, you know, the next 6 years true. And at least for a human mind, it's very hard to deal with these facts. Psychologically, it's very hard to deal with these facts. But what was probably the darkest period of our lives in terms of just worldly things, actually for me was a kind of spiritual renewal in many, many ways. So both my initial stay at the hospital and that one, and that time in general, claimed everything else removed. For me and for Danielle, it was a time of spiritual renewal. And that's why I also put in the second quote, this one from C.S. Lewis. He writes this as he's dealing with grief in this case, because his wife's died. But he says, God has not been trying an experiment on my faith or love in order to find out their quality. He knew it already. It was I to live it. He always knew that my temple was a house of cards. His only way of making you realize that fact was to knock it down. And that's essentially how I felt in that period. I felt that everything was being knocked down. But eventually, looking back at it, I realized that there was a bedrock of stability, of joy, of deep abiding love that I didn't realize was there, but that was revealed when everything else was stripped away. So that's conclusion number one. The second and slightly related one is that, I think next slide, but yes. So this one also from C.S. Lewis, but it says we can ignore even pleasure, but pain insists upon being attended to. God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks in our conscience, but shouts in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse the deaf world. And this period, this 1 year period, especially from March 2020 until August 2021, was my megaphone moment.
It was Dodge shouting at me, essentially. And I had spent the previous 6 years very busy with young babies, young children. People in the room here sitting at the back will understand what I'm saying. It is a marathon when you have children. So we had Andy 6 years prior to this point. And to a certain extent, this is legitimate. But the demands of my time, my busyness, I had allowed my spiritual life to sort of lay dormant. But in that 1 year, even with everything else going on, what in theory, externally, would look like I was a lot busier, I was running a sprint at this point, I was actually being deeply renewed, quite a lot. So that's the second thing. And the third one, and this is why I wanted to lay out this sequence of events as I did, was about God's providence and his guiding for us. But looking back at it, there's this image. This one, it's a common BD trope from these B-list action movies of the 90s that my dad likes to watch. But you have like the hero walking out of the mine shaft where the supervillain has his lair, everything's exploding around him. But he's still in his suit. His boots are still shiny. Smells like roses, et cetera, et cetera. He's fine. He's undressed. Everybody else is out. But this is what those 3 years felt like to us. We were running a sprint. We actually got here completely exhausted, but somehow completely unscathed by everything else that had been going on around us. We left Lebanon in May of 2020. We made the decision to leave April in May of 2021. In August, we moved. In September, Andrew's medication was no longer available in Lebanon. We initially did not make the decision for that specific reason, but by the time we were sort of making the decision in May, Pat, there were rumblings that this was going to happen. It actually happened a month after we left. The reason was, you know, financial, the state collapsed, et cetera, et cetera, the usual, but it happened a month after we left, and partly why we were unable to return. We left the UAE. Chances are, had I waited another maybe 3 months, I would not have been able to find a job in London if I wanted to move, because the tech industry went through layoffs, et cetera, et cetera. And later that year, too. But again, I applied at exactly the right moment. And every time, it was by God's guidance. And then we came here to a place of refuge. We went through 2 years in the desert, and then we came here and we found Antioch. And to us, it was, you know, we were welcomed, we were helped. Several people were, you know, in practicalities, but also in finding brothers and sisters to live our, to share our Christian lives with, something very similar to the community we grew up in that we've been uprooted from. What I'm trying to say is, well, looking back at the sequence of events, God's hand and his providence and his guiding voice every step of the way, pulling us ahead of the storm, is very, very, very clear. And to us is, you know, we look back on it now and we go, okay, we can do nothing except stare in amazement at what happened to us. We went through what could have possibly, every single one of those individual events could potentially have shattered our family or been a mess to deal with, both practically or medically or et cetera. But somehow, we've ended up here. We've ended up in a place where we have new brothers and new sisters, and somehow still completely here. And so I want to thank the Lord for that. And I'll leave you with three questions to discuss. They are a bit dense. So I would say you could probably, if you fancy it, just pick one of them to discuss, or you could try all three. But I cut them there. They covered roughly the three topics I was talking about, or do I conclude it? But that's it. We'll wait for the start of the bricks at the go on to our